Let's get ready to rumble, everybody. It's somehow been 2 years since the last election, and so we've got to do this again. And the only thing that's on the line is everything. Everything is on the line. And we'll mostly know by tonight how things are gonna go, although not necessarily, which is one of the topics we're gonna get into on today's show. But I will not be running through all of this alone. I refuse to do that. No. Instead, very lucky to join once after far too long of a break. I'm joined by the comms director of Ultraviolet, as well as the host of Internet Hate Machine, Bridget Todd. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been way too long. I'm so excited to dip into all of this madness with you.
Oh, and there definitely is some madness. Now, before we jump into all that, though, the last time you were on, we did talk about your other podcast, but I'm just learning now about Internet Hate Machine. Many of our viewers might be learning about it for the first time too. You want to tell us a little bit about your new show?
Yeah, my new podcast is called Internet Hate Machine. Really, it's an exploration of our, I guess, pretty dismal political and social landscape that I guess I can only really refer to as a hellscape. And how the trajectory of how we got here is really tied up in the way that marginalized people, so women and people of color, have really been harassed on social media platforms like Twitter. I see a very direct through line between online harassment and abuse of marginalized people and how we got to this hellscape where it feels like everything is so divided and we can't even have meaningful conversations on our largest digital communications platforms anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, honestly, I think that they're making drawing this link for you a very easy thing to do, because they really, it's not like this is a thing that's also happening. They're very clear that this is like central to their political worldview. Like Absolutely. Trying to attack and harass the other side, that's what they get out of this. So
yeah, it's that's the whole thing. And I think that what I really want to do with the podcast is really ask some questions about, is this the political landscape that we want? Is this political landscape serving us when extremists and bad actors are able to weaponize online platforms to harass and to suppress yeah. marginalized people? Is that so good?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the only thing that might save us is responsible stewards of these platforms like Elon Musk. I mean, maybe he can save. Anyway. Everyone check out Internet Hate Machine, and also check out the rest of this show, because we do have a lot that we're going to be talking about, not only giving an idea of what to expect tonight and when to expect it, but also latest updates on the attack on Paul Pelosi, Donald Trump weighing in once again. We're finally going to get to what we teased yesterday, which is Ron DeSantis's past. Dude loves to talk about groomers. Is it possible there's just a wee bit of projection there? We'll dive into that, as well as some of the actual real world impacts of the new abortion bans that have taken effect across the country. We've got all that and more. And in the aftermath, we're gonna be talking about racism and bias on police Facebook pages. We've got a conservative pastor, like a hard right conservative pastor, turning on Marjorie Greene, and Matt Walsh being fact checked in real time on gender affirming therapies. So you know that's gonna be fun. Anyway, in advance of all that, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great. And if you wanna send us any comments, tweets, or super chats as we go through, we'll read those during our social breaks. That said, Bridget, you ready to launch into election day?
Woo, ready as I'm gonna be.
It's gonna be a big one. Everyone, I'm gonna need you to buckle up, hold on to your butts, and let's jump into this.
It's a no-brainer. There should absolutely be a result no later than like the middle of the night, early Wednesday morning.
You would think so, right?
You would think so. And I think those areas that don't have a result, it's going to look very suspicious.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I don't think that you think that. It's definitely not true. That's just a fact that we cannot just expect that every area across the country is going to have all of the definitive results the night of, because, and I can't stress this enough, that has never ever been the way it is. I understand that there's a lot of people paying attention to politics these days, maybe tracking this election very closely, that have only sat through one or maybe two elections. And so, you know, 2020, 2024, that seems like distant history. But the world existed beyond just 2016. And it has never been the case that we definitively know the results of every election the night of. That is just not the way it is. And if you're a regular person following politics and you don't know that, that's totally acceptable. It does seem reasonable that we would know night of. But I need you to understand that whether it's Christina Bob, Trump lawyer in that video, or right-wing pundits saying that if the results aren't out tonight, that's super suspicious, you need to understand that they don't actually believe that. They've been following politics and they know that election results often take days, if not longer, to be definitive. And by the way, can I remind you that that is kind of by design, by Republican design. As Steve Ledeck on Twitter points out, many key states, thanks to laws that were passed by Republican controlled legislatures, aren't even allowed to begin counting mail-in votes until after the polls close. So if it takes a while to count those final votes, that is the choice of right-wingers in doing this. Also, by the way, if you wanted a really quick on the day count, maybe you'd be telling your voters to mail in their ballot early, vote early. That way those things can begin to be counted. If you're out there as Trump and many Republicans are telling people, no, only vote on the day of, then if that works, that will create a glut of votes that have to be counted the day of. So again, they know all of this. If you're just getting into this, it's understandable that you don't understand all of this. That's perfectly fine. But they are producing a delay that they then plan to weaponize, as we'll get into. But anyway, before we get into how this is gonna work in practice, Bridget, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right. And what's so interesting to me is how comfortable they are really giving away the game. They're already setting up the groundwork to sow that thread of doubt in our democratic process and in our elections, right? By seeding this idea that isn't it strange that it's taking a while to count the votes? No, that is completely commonplace and completely expected. And the way that they're just giving away the game of how they intend to challenge our democratic process and challenge election results and contest elections, it's maddening to me. And it's also just really telling that they're not even interested in having it be something that's clandestine. They're just giving it away. You know, this is how we intend to sow doubt in our democratic process. So get ready.
Exactly. And it's particularly weird because, like, we all expect that the Republicans are gonna do well, right? Like, I think everybody, we don't know exactly how well, but it's expected they're gonna do well. You could easily make the case they don't need to sow doubt because they're probably gonna win a lot of these races. But that is not good enough. Let's be very clear, that is not good enough for them, because while they want to win these races, they do have longer term goals. And one of those longer term goals is to make sure that their voters never ever again in their life just trust the process. Only trust what people you like are telling you about the process. And again, remember, it's not like them winning is going to hamper their narrative. Carrie Lake is telling people not to necessarily trust the result of this election. She won her primary. She said there was fraud in that one. The fact that she won the primary did not reassure her that it had been fair. Somehow the Democrats had gotten involved in her primary to peddle fraud, and she had still won. I guess they failed. And that none of that was enough to get her voters to think that maybe there's something to this election thing. So even if Carrie Lake wins, she's still going to tell people that the Democrats tried to cheat her out of it. I guess they just didn't cross their T's and dot their I's. I don't know. But anyway, it isn't just Trump lawyers. Fox News, which has a very large audience, literally in the millions, has been trying to get their audience to be ready for these sorts of lies. Take a look at Jesse Waters right here.
And don't listen to the lies they're spewing that this could take days or days, you know, to know who won. This is total BS. A wave like this, we should know that night, basically, who won the Senate and the House. Anything that happens Wednesday into Thursday is gravy.
Okay, so Jesse Waters has been covering politics for a number of years. He knows that that's not true. Like, he is, again, he's not lying to me. I'm not watching him. I don't care what Jesse Waters says. If you're a conservative, you need to know he's only lying to you. You're the audience. He knows that that's not how it works. By the way, it is entirely possible that it'll be such a wave that we will know. But the Senate is expected to be close regardless. It isn't just about how many votes a particular candidate gets. This could well come down to one or two races, and those races might not be decided. He 100% understands that. He knows that that has nothing to do with fraud, but he is openly lying to you because he doesn't care about you. You need to understand that. And what he is talking about there, the idea that we won't necessarily know, when he was talking about, he had the little sidebar of the Red Mirage. The Red Mirage is an idea which could be proven accurate or not, that the votes that initially will come in aren't necessarily going to be representative of the entirety of the vote. Especially when, like in 2020, the Republicans are telling their voters not to mail in ballots, not to vote early, to only come day of. That can manipulate things. I don't even know in what direction, but they're messing with the system and then trying to tell their voters that the necessary product of their messing with the system is proof that the system has been messed with by the other side. That's the trick that they're playing. Remember, and again, if you weren't watching in 2020, it's fine, I'm gonna catch you up. In the months leading up to the vote, everyone was saying there's gonna be a lot of mail-in ballots. They're not gonna be counted until day of, later than some of the day of actual votes. That could produce this thing where it looks like the Republicans are doing well, but the late votes will break for the Democrats. They told people that over and over and over again. Fox News pulled this same game. That's exactly what happened in the actual election. And they use that to as evidence that the vote could not be trusted. We're just going through a reboot of that exact same process. The issue, Bridget, for me is that, like, I can recount what happened in 2020, but Jesse Waters isn't gonna be reminding his voters of that. They're trying to keep their voters in the dark. And those voters who got so mad after 2020 that some of them were willing to literally storm the Capitol are being prepped for the same sort of thing today. Even though, as we've already acknowledged, it's likely that this is going to be a much more favorable outcome for the right.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that you mentioned the way that these are just lies. Jesse Waters knows exactly what he's doing. Anybody who's worked in political media for as long as folks at Fox News have know exactly what they're doing. They're intentionally lying to people. They are spreading disinformation to keep their viewers to keep the citizenry that watches Fox News uneducated and angry. This is like what they do. It is part and parcel of their programming and their strategy. And I think that you're exactly right that it is about sowing long-term distrust in our institutions more broadly. And so, you know, you're talking about Carrie Lake earlier. I completely agree that it does seem strange to be sowing all of this doubt into our democratic process that favored you. But I think it's about the long-term goal of making sure that people are distrustful of our institutions more broadly.
Yeah, 100%. This is pointless. Because, like what I'm about to say, it's pointless because right wingers are not gonna hear it. And if they do, they're just going to block it out. But if you're a right winger who believes that the elections are stolen by the Democrats all the time, why did Carrie Lake win her primary? If she's the one that, according to her, is like pulling back the veil on all this and she's gonna teach everybody what's really good, why didn't they cheat her out of her result? If she wins tonight, why didn't they cheat her out of that? Why is Marjorie Greene still in office? Why is Lauren Boebert still in office? Why is Matt Gaetz in office? If they could steal the 2020 election when the Republicans had been in charge federally for 4 years, why didn't they steal the 2016 election when the Democrats had been in charge for 8 years? It seems like it would be a lot easier to steal it in that case too, right? Okay, you don't believe that the polls are accurate. You don't trust any polls. Why are the polls breaking for the Republicans in the last couple of weeks? No, but think about that. If you were the Democrats and the polls are all made up and it's a big conspiracy and you're gonna steal it, wouldn't you have the polls break for the Democrats in the lead up to the election? That way the fake news media could point to that and be like, well, it definitely looked like it was going for the Democrats, and what do you know, they won. Now, if the Democrats win, it's going to be more of a surprise. So if you were faking all of these polls, why would you fake them in this way? Seriously, if mail-in ballots are inherently fraudulent, why do red states have mail-in balloting? Why have some had that for literally decades? Again, I'm asking you to just think about any of this because none of it adds up. There are ways that elections can be affected. You know, like honestly, the fact that the Saudis and the Russians are jacking up the price of gas by cutting their production, that's the sort of thing that can affect an election. Gerrymandering can affect an election. Insane campaign spending can affect there are things that can affect elections, but you have to actually be able to point to it. You have to actually provide evidence. Can you expect just a bit more out of your conspiracy theories, please? Sorry.
No, I mean, you're exactly right. And I think like these conspiracy theories, that's the way the conspiracy theories operate, is that there's always going to be some kind of explanation for why this theory is not working the way that, you know, logically it should. What, like, I'm sure that Carrie, that there would be some sort of explanation as to why some of these races worked out in their favor if they are also rigged. And I think that you're exactly right that we've gotten to a place where folks are so dug in and they're such a powerful, effective, well-funded machine at reinforcing these lies and conspiracy theories that folks are so dug in that they're not gonna listen to these like very logical, basic, critical thinking questions that you've presented. And in fact, you presenting it is just going to dig them in further to what we know is just not true.
Yeah, that sucks. But yeah, you're probably right. I don't think you're wrong, but it does suck that that's the way that it so often works. Anyway, look, we've got a lot more that we have to talk about, including some non-direct election related stuff. So don't go anywhere. Bridget and I'll be back after this. Okay, everybody, lots more to talk about. Let's jump into this.
Former President of the United States, Donald Trump, Elon Musk, others have spread stories, casting doubt on what happened, fomenting conspiracy theories. What do you have to say to them?
It's really sad for the country.
I don't always agree with Nancy Pelosi, but there I do agree with her. We have massive differences when it comes to policy as well as strategy. But I can only imagine what it's been like with her husband just recently getting out of the hospital from having his skull cracked open by a right winger, and knowing every step along the way that not only are you worried about him potentially dying, but you're watching the right wing delighting in the attack that nearly took his life. The attacker who wanted to kill her as well. Watching the jokes literally from the children of the former president joking about it. Watching Republicans dress up as the assassin. It's just sick stuff. Anyway, she has more to say about that.
It's really sad for the country that people of that high visibility would separate themselves from the facts and the truth in such a blatant way. It's really sad, and it is traumatizing to those affected by it. They don't care about that, obviously, but it's destructive to the unity that we want to have in our country. But I don't have anything to say to them. I mean, we have nothing. There would be no common ground to have any conversation with them.
I agree again. Yeah, I think that at this point, sure, look, it's damaging to the unity. I think that we're way past that at this point. But yeah, it's hard to imagine what common ground you're gonna have with people who are cheering the fact that you were nearly killed. And I don't know how, as a politician, you go on knowing that there are people who not only like hope that you get attacked, but will publicly celebrate your attempted assassination. Hosts with millions of viewers a day, the most prominent politicians on the other side, feeling that they don't need to pretend that this is a bad thing, knowing that if they laugh about it, joke about it, their base is going to love them and trust them more based on that. This incident is damaging its own right in the literal attack, Bridget, but it's just revealed really how far we've fallen as a society.
It really has. I think that when you have elected officials and other folks in politics, folks with huge platforms, really platforming and fomenting, I have to say, homophobic conspiracy theories on an attack like this, we really have a problem. And, you know, I think when you look at the actual words of the alleged attacker, he had planned to break Nancy Pelosi's kneecaps and send her to work with broken knees to make a signal to other Democrats that they can't just lie. It's political violence, and it's an attack on our democracy. If this kind of thing is tolerated, We do not have a healthy, functional democracy. This is political violence. It is meant to scare people who are elected officials out of doing their jobs. And if we are going to tolerate this and just sit while elected officials laugh about it, while folks with big platforms laugh about it, we do not have a healthy democracy. This is a symptom of a democracy that is truly in peril.
I agree. And the issue is that, like, then what do we do about it? Because the solution to these people being so clearly sick is supposed to be that they wouldn't get elected. They wouldn't win a primary and they certainly wouldn't win a general election. But the problem is that they're sick, they're disgusting, but their voters are just as bad in a lot of cases, or at least have been convinced that no matter how bad their politicians are, well, the other side are Satanists. So I guess I gotta go with the people joking about an 82-year-old skull being cracked open. And so that's the difficult position that we're put in. We're expecting people who love this stuff to put a stop to it. And that's difficult to imagine that happening. Absolutely. By the way, continue.
Oh, I completely agree with you. And I think when it comes to sort of looking at other folks, like, I firmly believe that all of our humanity is connected and linked, whether these folks like it or not. And so when somebody can attack Nancy Pelosi and the response on the other side is to laugh at her pain, laugh at her husband, make homophobic conspiracy theories about what happened, I think it just goes to show, like, I believe that that is a symptom, a symptomatic of a larger problem that is eventually going to come for all of us, regardless of where you are. Like, this is, I don't really even see this as a partisan thing. This is a symptom of a society that is not well, and that is going to come for all of us in the end, because all of our humanity, I believe, is deeply linked.
Exactly. No, I agree. But you seem like reasonable and emotionally well. So I don't know, that's not as exciting as someone who's doing a Halloween costume where they're wearing underwear and having a hammer. So I'm gonna go with the hammer person. Anyway, speaking of sickos, why don't we jump into our next video?
This was just a cabal. This was just a group of people where crazy Nancy Pelosi, by the way, how's she doing lately? How's she doing? Where crazy Nancy Pelosi has the votes.
At a certain point, Trump isn't the problem, I'm the problem. Because why am I surprised by that? Why when he says that, do I like go, what? How is she doing lately? Why do I react with horror at that or any level of shock? I'm the issue, that I'm still so naive that I wouldn't expect that Trump would stand in front of a crowd of thousands and mockingly say about the woman who was, her husband was nearly murdered, yeah, how is she? That, I mean, that is like, for, again, we've done this so many times the last few years. Forget everything that you've ever known about Donald Trump, everything that he's done, every horrendous piece of legislation, executive action, all the horrible, racist, misogynistic, homophobic things he's said. If you saw a video of a person you had gone to high school with saying that about someone whose spouse was nearly murdered, you'd be done. That would be it. You wouldn't need any other context about that person. You'd know everything you need to know about them. But for Trump, it's just the latest in an endless series of unacceptable things. And he's doing it. He's not, this is not with Billy Bush where a hot mic caught him. This isn't the Daily Beast has a source. He was standing on a rally stage knowing he was being filmed, knowing his audience would like it, and they did. And he said that about Nancy Pelosi, who, again, I will say, I disagree with on a number of different things. I would prefer that she not be in Democratic leadership. But the idea that the near death of her husband should be a source for applause lines is truly sick.
It is sick. But again, like, I'm not surprised. This is who he is. This is who his base is. They love this. I think that we, you know, there was a time, like, I remember after the Access Hollywood tape, Trump understood that he needed to go on television and be like, you know, oh, it was locker room talk, it wasn't me. We're so far past that. He knows that people like this. He can say and do things that are racist, homophobic, misogynistic, disgusting, violent, and people will applaud. And again, like, it's bad, folks. Like, it's not just bad because who wants to see somebody with that amount of power do those kinds of things? It's bad for all of us because it's a symptom of being in a very sick, unwell nation.
Yeah. I just, it's not, things weren't great in 2003. Let's be clear about that. If you were to jump back, I mean, I wasn't doing media or whatever, but it's not like things were great. Things were bad. There were misogynists and homophobes and racists and all of that. But they at least thought, well, I gotta hide what I really believe, right? I can't be too open about it. We have to be subtle. That's gone. That's gone. People are bigoted in all of these ways, but they also know that that is a road to fame and riches. Like, and I don't want to live in that country where people believe that like their bread will be buttered by being as absolutely horrendous as you can imagine.
Yeah, I'm glad that you put it that way, because we have absolutely incentivized extremism. We've incentivized us to be our worst, ugliest selves. And you're absolutely right that, you know, this kind of stuff did not begin and end with Donald Trump. It's been in our society since the beginning of time. But we have social media platforms and media empires that incentivize it, that tell you if you are your worst self, your most awful self, you can make money from it. You can build a platform from it. And so that is new. The entire infrastructure that we have to amplify and incentivize this kind of extremist incendiary behavior is new and very scary.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's almost like there should be a podcast that breaks down this like hate machine on the internet.
If only.
It's almost as if, And Janet, yes, he called Nancy Pelosi an animal at another rally. We actually have that video, but we don't have time to get to it. But yeah, it's just a nonstop attack using, like, they're sending every signal they can to their base. We want you to kill these people. If you do, by the way, we're gonna play defense for you. We're gonna pretend that we can't know. We're gonna pretend that it's not a big deal. Like, we're gonna cover for you. Whether you succeed or not in your attempted assassination, we're gonna cover for you. That is what they're doing. Not the fringe. This isn't Nick Fuentes doing this. This is the biggest names in politics and media on the right. And with that said, let's get to something we wanted to cover yesterday. Just a brief little history lesson on Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis can barely go 10 minutes without talking about kids and how they need to be protected and how they need to be saved from all of the predators out there. Well, I'm not saying that Ron DeSantis is a predator. All I'm saying is that former students of his are saying that he did some sketchy stuff back when he was their teacher. He was not, so far as we know, having sex with his students or anything like that. Let's be very clear. We're not insane provocateur conspiracy theorists like the libs of TikTok. But several students talking about Ron DeSantis's time 2 decades ago teaching at the Darlington School say that Mr. DeSantis was a frequent presence at parties with the seniors who lived in town. Most spoke about socializing with him on the condition of anonymity because they feared backlash for speaking publicly about it. They're probably worried that they would get death threats for literally the rest of their life, and I understand that fear. They say, as an 18-year-old, I remember thinking, what are you doing here, dude? One of the students said that when she was a senior, the fall after Mr. DeSantis left, she found a memo on a teacher's desk reminding the staff that fraternizing with students was inappropriate even after they graduated. That's got to be about Mr. DeSantis. That's what I remember everyone saying, she said. Other students remembered at least one other teacher who had socialized with students that year. So apparently he was not the only one, to be fair, I guess. Anyway, last year, Hill Reporter, a blog managed by a Democratic super PAC, published a photo of Mr. DeSantis taken with several female students from Darlington back in 2002, one of whom was holding what appeared to be a bottle of beer. Now we know that that's not particularly surprising. He was going to these parties. That's going to be possible. Two former students, both women, remembered him attending at least 2 parties where alcohol was served, but they said that the parties took place after graduation and that they were not bothered by his presence at the time, although they question it now. It was his first job out of Yale. He was cute. We didn't really think much about it, one of the former students said. And maybe there's nothing to be thought about it. Maybe absolutely nothing happened. And more importantly, maybe he didn't have any ulterior motives. Maybe he just was hanging out with high school seniors at parties or whatever, or some recent graduates or whatever. Maybe that's all it is. But I would say in that case then, if you totally were doing nothing wrong, but you believe that having a closer relationship with the students is important beyond just like concrete academics, then maybe you can be a little bit more understanding about teachers, you know, like mentioning that they're married or something. Like if you're watching them do like keg stands, maybe a teacher having blue hair shouldn't be cause for you to file like new legislation. That's all I'm saying. You don't have to have been a groomer, Ron DeSantis, for this revelation about your history to make the way that you're acting now look really bad. Bridget, what do you think?
I agree with you. And I also think this is something that we see time and time again with these kind of cooked up moral panics around things like groomers. What they actually do is people are so focused on these ridiculous attacks on teachers who are married, teachers with blue hair, all of that kind of thing, that they then obscure the actual inappropriate behavior that is happening. I will happily go on the record and say that it is not appropriate for Ron DeSantis to have been partying and drinking with students who were not of age. That's not appropriate behavior. But when you focus on this boogeyman of, you know, LGBTQ teachers just existing and being, you know, in the classroom, when you make that a boogeyman, it takes the actual heat off of the actual inappropriate behavior that is happening. In this case, the call is coming from inside the house. That is not appropriate behavior for an educator.
Yeah, just like I guess I was making analogies to other things. Okay, let's make it the most clear analogy possible. If a lesbian teacher was hanging out at these parties right now in Miami, would Ron DeSantis be okay with that? Would Ron DeSantis be okay with that teacher doing the literal exact same thing that he was doing? You know that he would not. You know that libs of TikTok would be spreading that. These conservative mom organizations would be protesting them. You know deep within your soul that that is the case. So let's be clear about that. And by the way, in both sides of this analogy, nothing untoward was happening beyond the hanging out. They're not actually grooming these people, they're not actually sleeping with them. But there's a very different, very clear double standard in what Ron DeSantis would have you believe is acceptable and how he actually acted when he was a teacher.
Yeah, and I would actually argue that he knows this. I want to be clear. I don't think that DeSantis actually thinks that LGBTQ folks in classrooms is an actual threat. I think he knows it's just a callous way to whip up his base and to target and bully marginalized people. And so like it's shameless, and it's really clear that like it would be a completely different standard for a lesbian teacher than he sets for his own actual behavior. That's because he knows that the LGBTQ teacher isn't actually a threat in a classroom.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, we're gonna move on to one more topic in this. Oh, by the way, you can read more about his time at Darlington in the New York Times. Oh, what do you know? He had some really weird things to say about the Civil War and slavery as well. Highly doubt that that's gonna bother his base, just to be clear about that. But anyway, let's move on to this next topic. We're now in some cases months into state level changes to abortion access, and it is already having an effect. You can see on this map the change in percentage number of abortions between April and August of this year, broken down by state. And you can see that some of the states have fewer abortions than they did earlier this year. Some have far, far fewer. Others have more or even far more. And none of this should be all too surprising, but we do need to at least mentally dive into what this means, what the effect we're gonna see on different states and on individuals from these changes in the law. The number of abortions, by the way, overall in the US fell by about 6% following the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Many states in which abortion remains legal saw significant increases, by the way, suggesting that people were traveling from out of state to obtain access. You can see, if we go to the map though, North Carolina, Kansas, Colorado, and Illinois saw the largest increases. Kansas, by the way, had that big vote earlier this year attempting to knock out the right, and that was not successful even in this quite red state. So bear that in mind going forward. But there were roughly 5,000 fewer total abortions nationwide in both July and August than there were in April. And you can see in some states, by the way, Oklahoma, Alabama, Arkansas, and Texas had less than 10 total abortions. At least technically, at least officially, God only knows in practice on the ground what's actually happening. That's one of the things we warned about in this. But also bear in mind, a lot of this is just added cost and difficulty for people who want to exercise the rights they should have. They have to go to a neighboring state, perhaps far away, perhaps staying overnight. It can be making it more expensive. But even if you like look at this overall and you say there are actually fewer abortions, think about what that means in practice. Now, I know the people supporting these rights being stripped away don't care. They want the abortion not to happen, and then they wash their hands of that person and the baby. They don't care. Like, they're not interested. They're not going to be following up. But if this is literally thousands of people who would have had abortions, is it possible that maybe they had a good reason? Is it possible that maybe this is going to throw literally thousands of people's lives into chaos, that that might have some sort of effect societally in terms of the government, like that something bad might come of this? I know, again, Bridget, that the people advocating for these rights to be stripped away don't care, but we care about what happens to people. And this is only, there's gonna be more and more thousands with every passing quarter or whatever. This is a lot of extra chaos being introduced across America.
Absolutely, and I'm so glad that you framed the conversation the way that you did, because this data is very compelling, but it's important to not lose sight that we're talking about real people with real lives that they have to make real decisions for. And so, you know, as compelling as the data is, these are real people's stories and real lives being thrown into turmoil because of these unfair draconian barriers being put in place between folks who need abortion care and the healthcare that they need. So I think, like, it really is stunning to think about how many people this is impacting. But as you said, this is exactly what we warned was going to happen. We're seeing it play out in real time, and I think it's really heartbreaking.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, I know to the extent that there are conservatives watching this, some of you have been trained to believe that stopping abortion is literally the only important thing in politics. You hold it as a religious value, and an atheist like me is not going to convince you to rethink that, despite, you know, me once again calling for you to, like, literally read the Bible and take a look at what they have to say about abortion. I'm begging you to read the book that you say that you follow. It doesn't necessarily have the stance on abortion that you think it does. But more importantly, for those of you who it isn't the central thing to your politics, you're conservative, you want to stop abortion, maybe you support some access to it, but you've been convinced that this is a net good. I would just ask you as a quick follow-up, we're now months into some of these states not having it, and a bunch of people are now going to have kids that they didn't either feel that they could take care of, didn't have the money for. Has that helped you with your inflation? Like, is the price of your prescription medication easier to bear now that people you'll never meet have been forced to have children that they didn't want to have? Like, are you able to retire when you wouldn't otherwise have been able to? Like, the actual quality of your life, is it better in any way because somewhere in San Antonio, a couple is forced to care for a child they can't afford to raise? Is your life better? I sincerely doubt it. This is at best an ephemeral, like, just a hypothetical win. This is not what actual politics should be about. This is not about your actual life, the actual quality of your economic well-being. I know I'm wasting my breath. I'm not going to get through to these people, but I just want people to be reasonable. Anyway, with that said, we're going to take our second break. When we come back, we have the right weighing in on a couple of the most important Senate races that'll be determined later on today. We'll have that for you after this. Okay, everybody, more to get to. Prepare yourself for this.
So I say to the voters of Pennsylvania tonight who are ready to check a box tomorrow, I think before you check a box, you should consider a statistic like that. Greater than 60% chance that someone like Fetterman, with a heart in his condition, having had a stroke, will either have a recurrence or won't survive the term. Tucker?
It's like, why not just, I mean, this happened in May. They had time to put a real candidate in. It's all so bewildering.
Yeah, it is bewildering that, you know, having all of this time, they weren't able to put a real candidate in. Instead, they had to go for the guy selling miracle weight loss beans on television for a number of years. It is weird that they had to pull Dr. Oz from literally a different state to pretend that he lives in Pennsylvania. That is weird, Tucker, I agree. Anyway, that's Mark Siegel, who is supposed to have some sort of medical expertise. And to the extent that that matters, it matters for Fox in that they can bring him in to imply that anyone who has had health difficulties like John Fetterman, literally a couple of years into an international pandemic, should not be allowed to hold office because they might die. Now, you'll note that the fact that Donald Trump had bouts with COVID and looks like he died 3 years ago was never an issue for them. It's only when it comes to Fetterman. Now, bear in mind, I'm not a doctor, so you don't have to trust me. Mark Siegel apparently is a medical expert, although some have noticed that his concern over the issues John Fetterman has, he doesn't seem to have been too worried about clear, like very obvious health difficulties in the past. I'm gonna give you a little bit of a throwback of Mark Siegel. Take a look at this.
Like you'll go person, woman, man, camera, TV. So they say, could you repeat that? So I said, yeah. So it's person, woman, man, camera, TV. Okay, that's very good. If you get it in order, you get extra points. If you, okay, now he's asking you other questions, and then 10 minutes, 15, 20 minutes later, they say, remember the first question? Not the first, but the 10th question? Give us that again. Can you do that again? And you go person, woman, man, camera, TV. If you get it in order, you get extra points.
Okay, so I want to hear more about how John Fetterman shouldn't be elected because years from now he might have health problems from the guy who nodded blankly along as Donald Trump brain farted his way through that segment. Can we go to this shot? This is a lot. This is a shot of Mark Siegel watching Donald Trump give maybe the weirdest interview we've ever heard from a president. I honestly believe that if you're listening to someone talking so slowly about a medical procedure like that, you should be legally allowed to just walk away. Like socially, there should be no stigma. You can walk away, you don't say goodbye. You can just walk right out of there. So Mark Siegel had no issue whatsoever with what Donald Trump said there, but now he's giving people advice about John Fetterman. Bridget, what do you think?
I mean, it's pretty rich. And I think that the level of like ableism that we've seen against Fetterman is so sad. As you said, coming out of a global, or being in the middle of a global pandemic, I think like it's really interesting to me who gets kind of called out for the way that they speak, for their health issues, and for whom it just like it apparently is not a problem. To be clear, I don't think that anybody should be, you know, like I think it's messed up to talk about him in this way that like the whole conversation about him needing captioning at the debates, like I thought that was kind of a really distasteful conversation. And it's just interesting who gets attacked for this and who for you know, it's just not a problem seemingly.
Yeah, and it's, this being America, it is so weird to so openly stigmatize someone who had a stroke. Like, you know what Americans do? They have strokes and they have heart attacks and they develop Alzheimer's. We have a number of these different chronic things that affect most of us inevitably. Like, well, what is it gonna be? Like, are they gonna be stigmatizing people for having cancer next? Like this happens. We're not a particularly healthy people. There's our diet, there's our political culture, there's the way that we handle healthcare. Like to attack John Fetterman for the inevitable consequence of what our government has done to us when it comes to our health is particularly rich, but especially when it's so selectively applied and then so conspiratorially applied. Like as you point out, like they're not content to just say he might have another stroke, lying that he's a robot, that the program is thinking for him, having literal multimillionaires lie to you about a speech to text program is incredibly condescending. Any final thoughts before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, we saw it with Hillary Clinton. We see it with Joe Biden. I think like it's not just the conversations about health. It's exactly what you said. The conspiracy theory is like, oh, she's been replaced with a body double. Like someone's in his ear telling him what to say. Like,
yep.
It's the conspiracy theories about other people's health that I find really distasteful.
Exactly. Yeah. Anyway, we're going to move on to one of the other big Senate races in just a sec. First, I want to read a couple of comments. Jackson Kissling sent in a super chat saying, I see folks here in Minnesota trying to downplay this election, saying abortion isn't on the ballot here. Relax. This behavior needs to be called out. Just vote. Like in every election, it is not the only thing that you should do politically. Don't ever believe that that's it. You should be participating beyond that. But you could also do that. Like, I feel like it's pretty, you shouldn't have to have an amazing ballot initiative to do like literally a few minutes of work every couple of years. This is a democracy and it's not going to sustain itself, obviously. Anyway, Moondragon says in a super chat, thank you, John and Bridget, for giving us a healthy dose of sanity today. Much appreciated. Thank you. By the way, I saw a YouTube comment from Kitty who says, found your show 2 years ago. Good luck, America, from a lefty in New Zealand. Thank you, Kitty. And if you could maybe stake out a little bit of land, if we need to flee, could we go visit you guys in New Zealand? That might be nice. Anyway, over on Twitch, Progressive B gifted a sub. Thank you very much for that. I think Steven gifted 10 subs earlier. I'm not seeing the message here. Let me know if I missed that, Steven. Okay, we'll get to more of your messages, but first, let's jump into this.
Legal immigrants are more patriotic than the leftists these days. They knew they worked to come into America and they love America. They want the laws followed in America. So the only person that we need to make sure we deport is Warnock.
Nikki Haley is considered like one of the serious contenders for the Republican nomination for 2024. Now, I think that that's ridiculous, but she is considered by many to be a serious Republican. And she just claimed that the American citizen, religious leader, Raphael Warnock, should be deported, which is like a fancy, slightly higher vocabulary version of go back to your country. That's effectively what we heard. Now, she's not going to say go back to your country because she's one of the fancy Republicans. She's not Marjorie Greene or anything, except at the end of the day, it's the exact same message. Bridget, Raphael Warnock is like, you don't have to agree with him on everything, but the idea that he should be deported should be below our politics. What do you think?
Oh my God, talk about Pollyanna. I shouldn't be surprised by how low any of these people will stink, but I'm a little stunned. Warnock was born in Savannah, Georgia. So when she's like, oh, he should be deported to where? Like, what is she talking about?
Now, are you sure that Savannah, Georgia's in America?
I mean, I honestly shouldn't be shocked. These are deeply unserious people who will say whatever if it riles up their base. And I should know that by now, but even I'm a little stunned by this one.
Yeah.
And I do think there was a time where she was trying to present herself as, you know, like, oh, I'm kind of a reasonable person and I'm like a more measured person. I guess that's going out the window because this is, you know, I'm stunned that she would say this with a straight face in front of people.
Yeah, like it's so crazy that I tried to come up with an explanation. You know how like sometimes people will hear about news happening in Georgia, the country, and they'll think it's Georgia, the state. Is she the first person ever to switch that? Does she think that he's from the country, Georgia? They can just throw it out there. The idea to the racist voters there that they're trying to appeal to, that because he's black, he's not really an American. You can say that he's a citizen, he's a community leader, he's a literal senator, he's a religious leader. It doesn't matter. To people like Nikki Haley, or at least to the base they're trying to appeal to, it's never gonna be enough. It's never gonna count. You're always gonna be able to throw these sorts of insane racist insults at them. Anyway, that is all the time we have for the first hour of our show. We're gonna be mixing it up, going maybe a little bit lighter in some ways. Light enough that I'm gonna have to be forced to briefly defend Marjorie Greene from some attacks coming at her from other conservatives. So if you've been watching the linear platforms or the podcast, thank you so much. But on our other platforms, we do have more to get to. We're gonna be in a little break for a couple minutes, but don't go anywhere. Bridget and I will be back in just a few.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.